Welcome to Real Money with Lisa Chastain. Over the next hour, you will hear from leading industry experts how to establish financial confidence and freedom. Her guests will motivate and inspire you to make those financial decisions that you have been thinking about for weeks and maybe even years. Now, here's your host, Lisa Chastain.
I'm here. It's Monday. It's a beautiful day in Las Vegas. It's still really hot in August in Las Vegas. Wherever you're listening to, though, I hope that day or night, we've got listeners now. Shout out, China is our second largest audience, which is super cool. So shout out to any of you who are listening from China and in the United States, of course, wherever you are and all over the world. Thank you for being a part of the Real Money community. Thank you for being a part of the conversation. I'm so grateful you're here. I say that always, but I really, really am. And shout out, I have so many shout outs, but shout out to my guest today, Jasmine Jarvis. You're going to hear a lot about Jasmine's story, what she's up to, and I know you're going to feel inspired. That's my goal, is really that you leave this show feeling inspired and motivated to take action. And even just hearing that you're not alone, that's the goal of this show. Also, we had Lexi on last week, and Lexi, that is her second time being on the show. We talked a lot about student loan debt, and she chimed in earlier or like last week sometime. She said, "Guess what?" And I said, "What?" And she said, "My husband's been listening to the show and he's really enjoying it." Of course, he listened to her show, but shout out to you, Hubs. If you're listening right now or whenever you listen to the show, I'm so grateful you're listening. Thanks for being here. Maybe we'll have you on as a guest, as Lexi's husband sometime. Anyway, today's show is a powerful show. I want to introduce you to my guest, Jasmine. You want to say hello, Jasmine?
Hi, everyone. So
hi, everyone.
To be here.
You can't see her. You can only hear her, but just know her face is lit up with a smile saying hello. And I invited Jasmine to be a part of the show for so many reasons. One reason is that I just think she's a really cool human. And we've gotten to know each other over the course of years through a connection of mine, Dana. So I hope Dana is listening either live or a replay. So shout out to you, Dana, who is actually one of my best friends. And when I started this work years ago, Dana and I met at a NABO luncheon. And it was like two magnets being drawn together. And we were like, "Do you want to be friends?" And she's like, "I'm a financial advisor." And I was like, "I'm doing this money coaching thing." And Dana has been one of my biggest cheerleaders and now one of my friends. And on my own money journey, when I talk about having your money community and money tribe, Dana's been someone that I've continued to lean on as a friend and support as I navigate my own financial stuff. And she's my financial advisor. And so I just, with so much love, am so grateful you're here, Jasmine, to now be a part of the conversation. Because we met, long story short, Jasmine and I met at one of my very first boot camps. I didn't even call it boot camp or money moves at that time. But Dana brought Jasmine. That was, gosh, like 4 or 5 years ago, right?
Yeah, that was a while ago.
How young were you?
If it was 5 years, I was 25. I'm 30 now. So yeah, I was like fresh out of, not too long out of college, you know, a few years maybe post-college.
That's what I think. You were just out of college. And so that's just how we know each other, which is not, you know, not the focus of today's conversation, but I think it gives some context on how we get to know, how we've gotten to know each other. And then you came to Spark Women's Retreat with us last year.
So much fun.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So let's shift gears and lean into what we want to talk about today. You want to introduce yourself to the audience?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm Jasmine Jarvis. I'm an entrepreneur. I own a business called Mixed in America, where I'm a mixed identity coach. And we're really focused on having more nuanced conversations about race, specifically through the multiracial mixed lens. And then I'm also a spiritual mentor and astrologer. So I do lots of things. But really the core of all the work that I do is healing and connecting to self and understanding self and really being empowered. And I just do that through a bunch of different channels.
Amazing. And that's been a journey to get here because that's not what you really, like you kind of went to college for that, but not really.
Oh yeah, no. I mean, college. College is a crazy concept. You know, you're like 18 and you really had no choices and like decisions of your like big decisions over your life. And then they ask you what you want to do for the rest of your life. And like, I have no idea. Like, I had to ask you to use the bathroom last week. Like, you know, like what? So I started out actually as a chemical engineer in college. And then I realized I didn't really care about the chemistry part. I really liked the math part. So I ended up becoming an analytical mathematics major. And then I also took a psychology class and I was like, oh, I love like mental health and understanding human psychology. So I ended up double majoring in math and psychology. And people were constantly like, what are you going to do with those two things? I was like, I have no idea. I just like them both and I'm good at them both. And it actually, both of them ended up working for exactly what I do now. So that's just kind of the way that the universe works, doesn't it? And yeah, and then I ended up in finance, you know, which I'm sure we'll talk about, but it's, my journey has been all over the place, but I really feel rooted in what I'm doing now. And I see how everything that I went through and every job I had, everything that I studied led me to this point.
Isn't that how it happens, right?
Yeah.
When I'm coaching young people, that's exactly how it happens, is that what you're doing at 18, 19 years old, it all is going to lead you, but it's never ever going to go straight up.
No,
you're never going to go linear, or you're never going to go. Yeah. It's always twists and turns. And it's really cool to hear that at 30, you're 30,
mm-hmm.
you have, and it's going to evolve over the next decade even, but for now you're totally. At a core. Yeah. You're doing what you believe is authentically work that you should be doing right now. That's really amazing.
Yeah. I feel really rooted in what I'm doing for sure. And it definitely was a journey to get here. It definitely was zigzags. It was not linear at all.
Yeah. So really quick, what I like to do at this part of the show is shout out your social media handles. Where can people find you? We're going to talk about Mixed in America, but let's give these people, the listeners, access to you right now. So as they're listening to the show, they can find you now. Where can everyone find you?
Totally. So if you want to find Mixed in America, you can find us on Instagram at mixed_in_America. And then if you want to follow me personally and my spiritual and astrology work, that's First House Ascension. No underscores, just First House Ascension.
First House Ascension. Very cool.
Yeah.
And we'll make sure to shout that out on our social media handles too. So grateful you're here. You ready? You ready to take a journey?
Yes. Let's dive in.
Okay. Okay. So you were born and raised in Las Vegas.
Yep.
Henderson more specifically.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
And you are mixed race. Now, if I say something and I screw it up, I'm just going to apologize right now. Like in terms of identity and race and all of that, you just correct me, whatever I got wrong. But that's, you were raised mixed race. So your mom's white, your dad's black.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. And that matters, I think, solely for your, you know, what you're doing right now is to point that out to the listeners. What was life growing up? I know through your mom's lens, what life was like when she was younger, but share with us and the listeners, what was life like for you growing up in Henderson?
Oh, okay. That's a loaded question.
Good. I like to load them up.
What aspect? Well, coming from the mixed race perspective, I'll start there. You know, Henderson is a predominantly white suburban neighborhood. So for me, not just being a person of color, but being specifically mixed, I very much felt kind of like an alien. It's really wild. You know, back then when we took standardized testing, you like have to check one race. That was the first time I remember having like what I call a mixed existential crisis, when you're like, what? Mm. You know, and I remember it was like check one, and I'm like, you know, and that's not supposed to be a hard question on the test. And I'm like stuck on question one. Everyone else is taking the test. And I'm like, I can't check one. I don't even know, you know, and it's like my brain just, you know, so I think from a really young age for mixed people, you kind of feel like an outsider, like you kind of have, you can get along with a lot of people because you have this multiple perspective and lens, but at the same time, you never really feel fully seen because the world is really made in a binary way. You know, it's made to pick one box and stick to it. And that's just not the mixed experience. So growing up in Henderson, that definitely, I felt that intensely. Now, so much so that when I was, you know, looking to go to college, I knew I wanted to get out of Vegas because I was like, there's something here that's just not, it doesn't make me feel home. And I think that was a big part of it before I could really realize that race was a big part of it. But other than that, you know, I played basketball. So that was really my first love. And I really just poured myself into basketball in school. So that was a focus for me primarily growing up.
And your dad was a basketball coach.
Yeah, my dad is the basketball coach. Mm-hmm. So that was a great outlet for me. You know, that was a way that I really got to feel seen in some other ways that I felt like I didn't just in my day to day at school in general. So that's a short synopsis of the challenges that I experienced.
Yeah. And you have two brothers. Mm-hmm. And now a beautiful little baby nephew.
Yes, I'm an aunt now.
And your mom, from conversations she and I have had, she realized when she and I started having these conversations is that her experience of it was that she never talked to you guys about money. And then for her growing up, they never talked about money. Like her parents never talked about money. Your dad was a bartender and a coach at this. Was he still bartending back then in the back day? Yeah.
Yep.
And your mom was a financial advisor. And I don't know what she did before that, but this is about you. What was your experience with money growing up?
Yeah, I would say non-existence. I didn't really have a relationship with money. And we didn't really talk about money in that way. That's something that me and my mom have really bonded over now, because I have obviously run into a lot of challenges and struggles when it comes to finances that she has. And it's kind of this light bulb moment for her of like, oh, I never told you that I went through this challenge, you know? So it's been a bonding experience as I've gotten older, because she is really realizing, oh yeah, we didn't really talk about like the problems of money. You know, I saw a lot of like, we never really struggled on Christmas, right? Like I got all the things that I wanted and things of that nature. So I got to sign up for all the basketball things I wanted to do and stuff like that. But we didn't really talk about any of their struggles, you know, when they were struggling or when they were, you know, not struggling to give us good Christmases and things of that nature. So I think I kind of grew up sheltered. There's a lot of sheltering around the money conversation. And so it was like a really rude awakening when I became an adult and had to form this relationship with money and not really knowing the dark side. Right.
Wow. Let's hang out in the dark side for a minute then.
Yeah. Let's get in it.
Where did you go to college?
I went to college in New York, in Manhattan College. I got a full-ride scholarship playing basketball. So right there, I already kind of am still in the sheltered space of money, because I didn't still have to worry really about money when it came to college, because I was an athlete. I stayed in New York after I graduated for 2 years and ended up working in finance as my first job.
Wow.
Yeah.
What led you down that path to finance?
Like I said, I have a degree in math and psychology, and I got an interview at a financial firm. And in my head, I'm just thinking, there's no way I'm going to get this. I don't have a degree in finance, like, you know, but they were specifically wanting to hire an analyst that had no finance background, because then I could be creating really unique algorithms and indicators and things of that nature that wouldn't be skewed by any financial knowledge. But I didn't know that going in. So I'm like, this is crazy, you know, because I get the job and I remember like having a full panic attack on my first day, because I was in a meeting and they're talking about finance and it is like Chinese. Like I do not understand the language whatsoever. It is its whole own language, and math and finance, two very different things. there's a few parts that intersect, but two very different things. And I remember being like imposter syndrome triggered intensely. I was like, I'm about to be fired. Like I didn't know what a stock was. I didn't know what equity was. I didn't know these really basic terms in finance, but I had 16 years of education at this point and didn't know those things, you know. And it's something I'm really passionate about now, is teaching that, because how did I have 2 degrees, 16 years of education, and not know anything about finance? And so that was my first entrance into the finance world, and it was intense. You know, I was also the only woman of color at the office. I was the youngest. And so I just felt really out of place and really overwhelmed, honestly.
Alongside of that, you didn't work through college being an athlete.
No. Yeah, it was my first job, really.
Yeah.
And then it was in finance in New York City. Very intense.
New York City is one of the most expensive cities to live in.
Yeah.
I mean, double. So you know, I have clients in New York and rent is double. State taxes kick in. It's just a whole different beast financially. So this is the first time that you're having to manage. What was your living? Were you living on your own? Did you have roommates?
Yeah, so I was living on my own. I had my own apartment in the Bronx. It was a 5-story walk-up. I don't know about living in New York. Buildings are very old and you can get ones that literally don't have an elevator. So I was in a 5-story walk-up. And I think my rent was $1,500 at that time. That was in, I mean, this was almost 10 years ago, I think, you know, and that was my rent, in a 5-story walk-up in the Bronx. And, so I, not knowing a lot about money, I get this job and I think the salary was maybe 50K. And I'm like, this is so much money. I'm rich. Like, I've never had a job, right? So mind you, I never had a job and I'm not realizing like the cost of living, that how that like plays a factor, you know. In my head, I'm just like, oh, I am like wealthy, like it's over. So that mindset completely, that took me down a really dark path, right? Because I have credit cards, and as soon as you get it, you know, you an increase in your salary, the limit on your credit cards go up. So I'm seeing that, I'm getting paid for the first time really ever. And I'm have no idea really how to budget at this point. I have no idea really a lot of the concept of credit even. I'm just like free money, you know? So it kind of just, I was spiraling at that point out of control. And I also didn't love my job. So it was kind of, you know, money can really be a drug. And for me, I think I was spending as a way to kind of distract myself from my unhappiness in the corporate world and my anxiety that I was feeling in the corporate world. So it was, that's kind of where I hit my first bump in the road of just maxing out credit cards and barely being able to pay rent when I have more than enough money to pay rent, but I'm just mismanaging the way I'm spending completely.
And you're 24, 25 years old.
Yeah. I'm 23 when I, you know, I first got this job and I'm like a child, you know, child. And I also fell in love for the first time during that time as well. And it was a really tumultuous relationship. So there's just a lot of factors. And it just was stacking, really. Mm-hmm.
It happens fast.
Yeah.
It happens fast, especially I believe in, you know, for me at the same time at 23, 24, 25, we're in this building part of our lives. College was pretty structured for you. Right. As an athlete, especially, college is very structured as a student athlete. Walk us down that path. And here's why. And we pre-gamed, not really like we had a conversation before the show and you're like, you're a Scorpio. You're going to ask good questions. So I'm just going to lean in there because I know that the listeners, there's someone listening. I always say this, but I believe in, you know, cosmically that there's someone listening to this that's saying, oh my gosh, that was my experience. Oh my gosh, I'm not alone. And there's something to be learned from this point in your life. And then, you know, of course, we'll shift gears into what you're up to now. So you're 23, 24, 25. You're in love. You're across the country from your family. Mm-hmm. You're going into debt. You don't know how to manage your money. How did you navigate that? And I know you have a strong relationship with your mom but and your family, but like how... What did that look like on a daily basis?
You know, and at that time I didn't really have a strong relationship with my mom and my parents. That's the thing. So I was really doing it by myself. You know, when you're an adolescent and, you know, everyone deals with some type of thing as a child and you get into that kind of rebellious, you know, I was totally in this rebellious, like, I don't want anything to do with my family. I moved across the country. I'm never going back. And so I wasn't even having those conversations all with my parents. So I was really relying on myself and also relying on my partner, which ended up biting me in the butt 100%. And you know, day to day, I just wasn't even thinking about my finances, to be honest. It wasn't like I was stressed about them. I was just kind of letting it get out of control. I was more stressed about my work environment. I was not liking working in finance in the corporate world at all. And I didn't know what to do about that because I grew up in such a structured way. Like you're kind of given a template early on of like, you know, get good grades in school, you go to college, you graduate college, you get a good stable job, you stay there, and that's your life and you're happy. Mm. You know, they tell you that. And then I kind of was feeling this feeling of like, wait, I followed the template to a T and I am depressed and I have anxiety. I thought I was going to be happy and rich and all of these things, you know? And so I was having this kind of like existential crisis of like, wait, what other options are there? You know, I hadn't really talked to business owners. I hadn't really talked to somebody who owned their own business and did their own thing. And so I honestly kind of didn't really know that that was an avenue or a choice because I've been given this kind of structured template. So day to day, I was just kind of on autopilot, I think, for the most part. I was just on autopilot and I just was kind of just pushing it under the rug mm-hmm. and in the back of my head, definitely knowing it's getting out of control. But the thing with credit cards is they'll just keep raising your limit. You know, you'll max it out and then they'll raise the limit. And so you're like, okay, well, I guess this is okay. That's fine, you know? And so it wasn't until, you know, really my mental health got to a point where I needed help in that way, where my anxiety was debilitating. And I knew that I needed to just take a look at my life as a whole, finance included.
Yeah. Yeah. Was there a breaking point?
Yeah, it was probably after year two in the corporate world at my job. And, you know, big factors was the partner that I was with was also financially irresponsible and also financially abusive in a lot of ways, using my credit, making me spend on things that he wanted, not that I wanted. And, you know, I was in love. So I happily agreed and just allowed that to add to fuel to the fire. And so I hit a breaking point. I had like a really bad panic attack. I ended up in the hospital actually. And I was like, I need to go home. I was like, let me go home so I can at least be around people. Cause I just didn't have a lot of close friends even in New York by myself. So I decided to quit my job, move back home and just kind of get that family environment again and kind of start over. Which was the best idea, but it still didn't solve all my problems most definitely, because at the root of it was still this lack of knowledge of finance. And I was still in that financially abusive relationship as well.
You were still in that. So you moved across the country and still in that relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. He was actually from Vegas and he moved to New York to be with me. And then we moved back together.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I got you. Gosh. Well, I wish I could say that you're the first person that I've had this, that I've had this conversation with. And that was something that we wanted to talk about and touch on is the element of financial abuse and what that really looks like. And we have women that come to us in our world who have hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt, $70,000, $80,000, $90,000 in debt. Because they just keep, you know, taking out, there's someone that just keeps coming back for more mm-hmm. and more and more. And as a resourceful, educated woman, you went out and got more and more and more. How did you break that cycle?
I think it broke for me. I really didn't break it. I think, you know, I'm a spiritual mentor, so I do believe that, like, the universe is always working to push you towards your path and your purpose. And the universe really intervened. Honestly, it got to the point where, I mean, my mental health was getting worse and worse. Definitely a big factor of that was this relationship. And it got to the point where I was just in such a dark hole. And it was like, the universe was like, you're not going to survive this. That's how it felt. Like, you're not going to survive this if you don't cut this off, you know, if you don't remove yourself from all the toxic people in your life. You know, it wasn't just him. I think I was just attracting people who were kind of sucking me dry in a lot of ways, more than financial, right? So I think I just hit a point mentally where I was like, I have to completely cut off the cancers and just realign with myself and focus back on what I'm desiring to do in life and just pull my energy back, pull my finances back and focus them on me. You know, so it wasn't like necessarily a choice. It was like, there was no choice. I was in a space where I was really, really depressed and just in a place of like, I have to change. Otherwise I'm not going to survive.
Reset button.
Yeah. Reset button.
Reset button. Wow. There's a lot of people who find themselves in that situation. Not even just in their 20s, but it builds and it builds and it builds and it builds. And then you're just at a point where I have to shift gears. And if I don't shift gears, I don't know what's going to happen. That I went through that. And so thank you for sharing that. Are you comfortable with sharing how much debt you had? Do you even remember?
Over $50,000.
Yeah.
Easily. Yeah.
Woo. And for a first, like, you know, first, that's a lot. Mm-hmm. And here you are.
Yeah.
And here you are. And we're going to talk about the recovery, because I'm sure it was like a recovery process in some ways, having to recover emotionally, financially. And, you know, years later, you're kicking ass. But it didn't happen overnight.
No, yeah. It's a process. And I think I still feel like I'm not out of I'm not seeing fully out of the consequences of all of those decisions. I think I'm still cleaning up my life from those decisions. But I'm definitely in a so much better place mentally, and I'm grounded. I'm doing what I want to do with my life. And I think that's like the most important thing for me.
Winding down to break. We've got a few minutes to break. What are the learnings there for you? What did you learn? So I don't remember. I saw a quote this morning actually, and it's like, there is no failure. You either succeed or you learn. Mm-hmm. What did you learn going through that experience in your 20s?
I think the biggest thing was trusting my intuition, because there was a lot of moments throughout that whole journey where I felt the ping of like, no, don't do this, or remove yourself. And I ignored them. You know, I kind of self-abandoned in a lot of ways. So I think trusting myself and trusting my intuition has been the biggest lesson through all that.
Trust yourself, trust your intuition. Oprah calls them whispers.
Yeah.
When you hear whispers, we're so good. I mean, women, I would say generalized, but especially young women are really good at not paying attention to the whispers, and they show up and manifest in so many different ways. And the universe, I love what you said. The universe was guiding you somewhere. Mm-hmm. And you're much more, even though not totally, and I don't know if we ever arrive, but now you're through the pain, which we're going to talk about, because you use that on the Mixed in America platform. There's power and there's pain. Mm-hmm. And through the pain, you found purpose. And Glennon Doyle says that too, first the pain, then the rising.
I love that. I love that quote.
I do too. So we're going to take a break. We've got just a couple minute break, and we're going to come back. And if you're listening to us live, shout out on Instagram, find Jasmine, find me, let us know what you're learning from this conversation, what's valuable from this conversation. We'd love to chat with you. Also on the break, you're going to get a phone number. If you want to call in, you can call in. We've never had any live call-ins, but hey, it's there. You'll get the phone number. You can call in. I never remember it, so it's never why I gave it. I don't give it out. But we're going to come back in just a couple of minutes. We're going to continue this conversation with Jasmine. I'm Lisa Chastain, your host of Real Money, and we will be back in just a couple of minutes.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
Not enough women are talking about money, and I am on a mission to change that. The truth is, so many women feel shame and guilt about the choices they are making financially. And if this is you, I want you to hear today that you are not alone. We are so capable of feeling confident about the choices we are making with our money. The problem is that for so many women, money isn't relatable. Industry experts are talking over your head, and this show is the perfect place for you to improve your confidence and relationship with money. With Real Money, I share real stories of women who are tackling their most difficult financial challenges. We are here to help you hear and understand that you are not alone in feeling lost or confused about your finances, so that you can build your confidence to learn how to make the right choices today. With Real Money, you're going to learn from other women how they tackle their biggest money challenges, so that you can get out there and start creating the stability, freedom, clarity, and fun you've always wanted. Join me, Lisa Chastain, each week as we talk about real money with real women for real life.
Voice America programs are now available on your favorite connected device, including Amazon, Alexa, and Google Home. Through streams with Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio, listening to your favorite show is as easy as saying the show name followed by the word podcast.
Hey, Alexa, play Finding Your Frequency podcast.
If that doesn't work, try adding on TuneIn or on iHeartRadio or on Apple Podcasts.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Real Money with Lisa Chastain on the Voice America Business Channel. If you have a question for Lisa or her guests, you can call into the show at 866-472-5789. That's 866-472-5789. You can also send an email to Lisa at lisachastain.com. Now, let's get back to the show. Here is Lisa Chastain.
I always love our segue conversations just in the during break and talking about what landed and what's valuable. And thank you, Jasmine, for sharing what you shared in the first segment of the show, hearing you say that that's not something you really talk about. And you're right. A lot of people don't talk about it. One, because we shame ourselves, and that's not what successful people are supposed to look like. And for me, the reason I don't talk a whole lot about my financially abusive relationships, not just one, is that I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed about it, that I'm a smart woman, right? Here's the things that I tell myself, and then you can jump in, but I'm a smart woman. I should have known better. I don't know why I kept myself there for so long. He's not really a bad person at heart. I know there's a good person in there somewhere. And then I should have known better. And so then, like you said, victim blaming. And for me, I was married for 15 years. I was with him for longer than that. And I here in my head, right, saying it out loud, I don't believe that he meant to hurt me. I don't believe that he meant to be that person, but it hurt all the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And everything you just said, that's like my internal dialogue, 100%.
Right. And then what did I do? I got a divorce and I jumped right back into an even more toxic, abusive situation. And like you were saying before the show, I just need to learn things the hard way.
Yeah.
This isn't about me, but I just want you to know that, like, thank you. And, I think that the listeners they appreciate you being willing to share your experience, and that I have a tattoo of a rose on my arm because the symbol of the rose is that the rose has to go down, down, down to the bottom of the, to the bottom of the soil to then rebirth. And I feel like that's what I had to do. And I'd love to hear for you and, you know, even saying like, I'm not fully out of it yet. Like there's still things that you're working through, and same thing here. And for our listeners, we keep working through it. But for you, what has that rebirthing process been like for you?
Yeah. Well, I loved everything you said about that too. I'm like, those dialogues was playing in my head as I'm sharing this, as I was sharing it, I was like, still feeling like, oh, well, he didn't mean to, or like, you know, I still, you know, he was a good person in other ways. And really just, I mean, we kind of self-gaslight ourselves, you know, in
yes.
a lot of ways. And I've had to really, I think that's why I haven't shared it before, because I'm like, well, did it really happen? Like, did it really happen? Or did I just mismanage my finances? Did I just, you know, was it my fault? Should I have just said no and not allowed him to use my credit, use my money, you know? Like, so I thank you for sharing your story too, because I think it's really healing for me to hear somebody kind of mirror that experience for me as well, because I don't actually really know. Or at least they haven't shared with me that they've experienced that too. Cause I think a lot of women actually do experience this. They just, again, have that shame, so don't share it. For me, yeah, I think with the rebirthing period, that's really where I found my connection to my spirituality. That's where I started, you know, tapping into these deeper parts of myself, these deeper parts of life. I honed in on some gifts that I never really honed in on. And that was really part of my rebirthing period. And also art, like your metaphor of the rose, like I love that. I ended up writing a lot of poetry about that time in my life and the rebirth. You know, I always talked about like a phoenix, right? Rising from the ashes. That was really my symbolism for that too. So I love that. And it just, it wasn't honestly the core thing that brought me out of it was connecting back to self so deeply, like just quieting all the noise from around me, quieting whatever, all the opinions that I was getting from people and everything, just connecting back to self, because that is where we'll hear our truth. That's where we'll heal those whispers, that intuition telling you, go left here, right? Take this turn. And when I connected back to self was when I really heard the whispers of creating my own businesses. Literally right after I like cut off that relationship was when I birthed Mixed America. And so it really out of the ashes, I was able to birth something that was really a part of my purpose and a part of my destiny. And I didn't hear that because I was so distracted by him, by the financial mess and just not hearing self. So that was really what helped me get out of the darkness was connecting back to self.
Wow. Wow. And it is so loud.
It's loud. It's so loud.
Oh my gosh. And especially when there's someone else that's a part of that, I remember feeling like I couldn't escape. Mm-hmm. I couldn't escape his words and other people's words. And it felt so noisy. That's such a great way of describing it. And so by having the courage to get quiet, did you have people guide you to that place or intuitively, is that where you went?
It was intuitive. I mean, that's honestly the reason that I'm really passionate about my spiritual work in a lot of ways and Mixed in America work, and is like, because I didn't have a guide. And I think so many people are in a space of like, I don't know what to do when I'm in any type of traumatic place and state. And I'm really passionate about helping people quiet the noise and connect back to self because of that, because I didn't have anybody tell me that's what you should do. Because no one really, honestly, not a lot of people know that's what you should do. We're so taught to look outside for the answer and outside for validation. So you get online, you start searching things, you ask, you know, your friends, your family for opinions, and really the answer's inside. And you're not really taught that ever. So it was a very much intuitive thing. So when I came back to Vegas, you know, I was working as an analyst in the gaming industry, and our company got shut down. And so I had 3 months of severance, and I was the first time I'd ever been had nothing, right? Because I'd been basketball and school straight into work. So I'd never had quiet like that. I'd never had time to myself like that. And that was when I was like, oh, there's something here. There's answers here when I'm not doing anything and I'm just with self. And I really had never experienced that before. So I think that was really, it wasn't by choice. It was just, again, the universe guiding me of like towards the answer. And I listened.
Good for you. Good for you for listening. And look at what's come from that. And I want to talk about the words that you use in Mixed America of power and pain.
Yeah.
And through the lens of biracial human woman, also not just biracial, but woman, which is another layer of complexity and history. So it's you and Megan came together, and what was that journey like? And then we'll talk about all of the other ways that you're creating super connection and meaning for people, but help me understand how Mixed America was born.
Yeah. So me and Megan have actually, Megan Smith, she's my co-founder. We've actually known each other since first grade.
Okay.
And we were the only mixed girls in our first grade class. And our moms like intuitively pushed us together and was like, y'all are going to need each other. But as we got older, we kind of drifted apart. And a lot of that had to do with the mixed experience, and that it really depends on like the way that you appear and how you're perceived. So for me, I'm darker skinned, and she's a little more white assuming or white passing. And so we kind of naturally just kind of got absorbed by different groups in high school, right? Just kind of with mixed people who can just go where you're claimed because you're like, I don't want to rub against edges. And so we drifted apart. And then as I'm in that dark period, I see on Instagram, she posts this post and is like, it said biracial cries. And she's like ranting about the mixed experience. And it was all these things that I had pages and pages written in my journal about, but I'd never shared with anyone. And I was like, someone gets it. I thought it was alone. Someone gets it. So I reached out to her and I was like, oh my gosh, we haven't talked in years, but I am experiencing the same mixed existential crisis. Like, what is this? And we hopped on the phone and literally one FaceTime and we created Mixed America. We were like, let's, and you know, we didn't have the intention of it being a business at first. It was just, we just wanted to create the conversation. So we're like, let's start an Instagram. Let's try and collect, you know, other mixed people in this space and have these conversations that America really isn't having or the world really isn't having. You know, we talk a lot about race, but mixed people are left out of those conversations.
Yeah.
You know, it's very binary. So
it's,
for mixed
it's
people,
sides. It's side. It's one
exactly,
side and the other.
Exactly. So mixed people really feel caught in the middle and they really feel, I mean, I, you know, I really struggled with dissociation because of that, because I'd just be like, I don't know this body. I don't know. It's, I'm confused. I don't know who I'm, where I'm supposed to go. And you receive, you know, you can receive discrimination from either side that you're a part of, you know, you're not white enough. You're not black enough. So, so we just kind of started that platform as just a way to have those conversations kind of selfishly so we could just heal together and like have these conversations. And then really in 2020, when race relations got even more intense, mixed people were feeling even more left out. And so it just escalated quickly. We ended up, you know, 20,000 people came to the space and we were like, okay, this is a problem. Like mixed people are feeling really confused and left out and hurt and not being heard in a way. And this is historically have never been heard really.
Mm. I feel like we could take this conversation in so many different directions. And I think that in the spirit of real money, where do you see the pain and the power interplay financially for the mixed community?
Yeah. So with pain and privilege or power, right? Because with mixed people, if you are mixed white, if you have proximity to whiteness, you likely experience some type of privilege, right? And that's become such an icky like charge word these days, but it's just a fact. Like it's not, it's a fact, right? And you also experience oppression and racism. So having both of those things at the same time is really confusing. And when it comes to finance, you know, every mixed situation is different, but for me in particular, I have a white mother who is in finance. So for me, I experienced a unique privilege as a mixed person, as a person of color, that I do have more information about finance than other people of color. That was actually one of the things that I really was woken up to as I entered the finance world of how gatekept it is. It's like, oh, this is a good old boys club, not even just for people of color, but also just men. It was like, I am one of two women maybe in the office of like 50 and the only black person. And it enraged me. I remember feeling like that was part of the reason I couldn't work there anymore, because I was just getting enraged by like, I'm working on all these portfolios, right? I was the analyst and just seeing, you know, millions of dollars come across my desk and not one of them was a woman, not one of them was a person of color. And I'm like, what, you know, it's just such a gatekept space. And so for me, I do have a privilege in that I got to go to my mom and be like, what is an IRA? What does a stock mean? Well, you know, things like this, where somebody who doesn't have that privilege can't ask those questions to their family. So I do have that. And then simultaneously I'm experiencing the microaggressions and racism literally in the finance world as I'm working in the world. And so with mixed people too, you can kind of sometimes you get a job because you have that proximity to whiteness, right? That's why I was the only black person, but I'm not even a monoracial black person, right? I'm half. So still they kind of got that diversity check by hiring me. But then if you're getting hired as a diversity check, that environment isn't safe for people of color.
No.
Because then they wouldn't need to hire you as a diversity check. So it's like being able to have a seat at the table, but the seat at the table is like abusive, you know? And so it's really complex. So then, you know, mixed people, again, gaslight ourselves because we're often told, well, you're not black enough to actually experience racism, or you're not, you know, blank enough to experience these things, but we are, and we actually have proximity to it in a way that
monoracial people don't. We're let into spaces that they actually wouldn't be a part of. So we kind of get a really unique version of that racism. So that's where it's pain and privilege at the same time. Sometimes your privilege results in pain as a mixed person.
Wow. My brain is like processing all of that.
It's complex. It is complex. Yeah. It's really complex and nuanced. And that's what makes in America, we really strive to simplify it in a way. So mixed people can just, oh, that's what I'm experiencing. I think it's really powerful to put words to what you're experiencing. And that validation is huge.
What are some things I've seen you on Instagram speaking specifically and directly into finance?
Yeah.
And I know you're really passionate about finance. It's one thing. And from your own journey and now where you're at, it sounds like you've been able to bridge some of the gap in your financial education and in your understanding of finance. But what are some of the things that you're really passionate about talking about finance in particular with your Mixed in America brand and platform? What do you want people to know?
I think, I'm really passionate about, financial independence, definitely. Mm-hmm. And just being in the know when it comes to your finances, just knowing what's going on. I think a lot of times, because people don't know a lot or they feel overwhelmed by it, then they just are like, I'm just not going to look at it. I'm just going to pretend like it doesn't exist. So I think kind of helping people get into that space of it not feeling scary and overwhelming and just like, it's money, there's so much weird energy around money. And I work a lot around money energetics as well. And when you have a weird energy around money, it manifests in bad ways. Right. And so I think clearing up that energy around money, the emotions around money, healing the money wounds that we have go back, to our family, to our ancestors. So it is a lot of like digging deep and unpacking the wounds that get passed down to you. Otherwise you're just going to keep kind of repeating the cycle. So that's something that I am really passionate about, not only in Mixed in America, but in my spiritual work as well. Mm-hmm. But for mixed people, it's also like, there's just so many money wounds deep, especially in the Black community, it traces back so far that like you really do have to do that deep groundwork and unpack those things. And I'm also really passionate about, healers in general, people who do healing work, whether that's, life coaches or, spiritual mentors and things like that, and charging appropriately for their services. Because I think there's a lot of icky energy around that as well.
I would agree with you. Can we lean into that conversation for healers?
Yeah,
because I see that healers chronically undercharge. Undercharge. Why do you think that is? Like, what do you see that happens there?
I think, it's also, it's a two-way street because it's also the amount of like DMs and comments that we've gotten saying we shouldn't be charging for this and that, it can kind of create that, oh no, am I doing something wrong? But I also think it's wild. It's, we pay for health insurance, right? We pay to go to the doctor. We pay for really expensive iPhones, all these things that we pay money for without even thinking. But then we want to judge, the person that is trying to heal us and help us and judge them for charging a rate, And I think, I'm not really sure what it's rooted in, to be honest. I think it varies for each person. I have to say I haven't, that isn't the biggest struggle that I have, but I definitely help. I like to help other people with that struggle. I think that, again, that comes with my privilege of having a mom in finance. Like, I know that I deserve to be paid and compensated for my work. I'm not really sure what it's rooted in, but it's something I'm really passionate about for sure.
I know for me, I never learned how to ask for money.
Yeah.
So being a W-2 employee, being given a salary, I had to prove myself to be able to be worthy of a certain salary amount. But then going into the world of business, I had never been taught how to ask for money. What was that journey like for you?
Yeah. Ooh, that's a good question. I think the imposter syndrome, I had to heal a lot of my imposter syndrome and like,
what's your saboteur? What's that conversation? What's the imposter syndrome?
There's a lot of different voices, but it's definitely, saying, I guess I do struggle with the healing charge. I used to really struggle with, charging as a healer, but I think the voice often says like, oh, you're actually not helping anybody, or, oh, you're fraud, you know, you're just taking people's money, right? That's the voice that comes in. Even mm-hmm. though I see the results, I have, you know, people are telling me that what I'm doing is helping them. There's still that part of me is like, you're a fraud. You're making this up. This isn't real. You know, you're stealing. And oof, quieting that voice sometimes is a challenge.
It is. It is. You're an inspiration for other women and a trailblazer in that way to say, you know what, I don't always know what I'm doing, and I don't either. But then you're still taking action. So you have those voices and you're deciding to take action anyway. And I think that's really cool. What's next for you? So you're 30. You just turned 30-ish. Right?
Yeah, March.
In March. Mm-hmm. And you're looking at this next, a lot of women that kind of wake up at 30, like, okay, now it's time to be a grown up. I'm not saying that happened for you, but then thinking about this next chapter of your life, knowing what you know, having been through what you've been through, being passionate and on track, I think aligned, I think is the right word. You're feeling aligned in your purpose. What do you see next and what do you see possible for yourself?
Yeah, I think I'm just going to, I think I'm on the path that I am aligned with for sure. And I think I'm just going to continue to kind of double down, is what I say, double down on it and just continue to pour in my businesses. I can't even say what my 5-year plan is because I'm so in that space of hearing those intuitive calls. You know, I just trust where I'm being pulled always. And that could look a completely different way, I think, in 5 years. I have no idea. And I think the wisest people know that they don't know.
They know that they don't know. Let's say that again. The wisest people know that they don't know.
They don't know.
Yes.
Yeah, I cannot tell you for sure, you know, but right now I'm so lit up by my work. I'm so lit up by Mixed in America and my spiritual work and my astrology work. And I just think continuing to help people and help people heal and teach people what I know, that is at the core of it always. So whatever that looks like, who knows, but that's the baseline of it.
I love that. I love that you're really in tune to that. And that's really for any woman, any man that's listening today, I think that's a huge inspiration is follow your own guide and your own internal system and follow the voices that are leading you to the greater purpose and the good. Follow those voices because it's good. There's goodness out there. With just a couple of minutes to close, this show could go on and on and on. So with a couple of minutes to close, I'm going to hand it over to you. You have people that you're passionate about supporting and in the multiple ways that you do, what's on your heart to share with them today on Real Money?
I guess, you know, and I've said this multiple times throughout this segment today is just connect to self. I think that's the biggest reminder. Anytime someone comes to me is like, I don't know what to do. It's like, connect back to self and the answer will be there. You know, like quiet the noise, don't go searching outside, look inside and let that be your compass.
Let that be your compass. And when it comes to money, what's the one thing that you want women to hear today?
You are more than capable of being in the know and handling your finances. It is not a man's world. It is most definitely a woman's world as well. And you can do it. You can be empowered in that way as well.
You absolutely can. You absolutely can. If I can do it, anybody can do it.
Yeah.
you did it and you're brilliant. I mean, hearing that you come from a mathematical background, most people would be like, holy shit, she's brilliant. And I believe that, but you're not just brilliant in that way, in so many ways, intuitively and spiritually, and the world is yours. And thank you for sharing your experience about being in the finance industry. And that is so many people's experience of the finance industry, which of course I'm on a mission, you're on a mission, other women in my world are on a mission to change that, not just for women, but for women of color, for women of all backgrounds, for mixed race women to say, hey, we can do this. And I'll leave with this one thought. 10% of the world's wealth is earned by women. It's made, we own 10% of the world's wealth. The sky is the limit for us. There is the lion's share out there for us. And we can do it when we do it together. So Jasmine, thank you for being a champion for your community. And thank you for being a part of the Real Money community. I know that people and women are listening to this show and feeling like, okay, I know I can do this. And your circumstances do not define your future. Let that be everyone's lesson today on the show, that your circumstances are temporary. When you have the ability and the mindset to quiet yourself, you know what to do. And if you can't take that step on your own, first of all, you don't have to. There are other people out there to support you, like Jasmine and me. We are here for you. Look us up, follow us, connect with us. Let us be a part of your community so that you can have what it is that you say you want in your life. Jasmine, thanks for being on the show today.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
Yes. And again, where can they find you?
Mixed in America, mixed underscore in underscore America, or First House Ascension. Yeah, follow me on Instagram. I love to connect with new people. I love to help and heal, as I said. So yes, come connect with me.
Yeah, and let's help and heal together. Yes. I'm Lisa Chastain, your host of Real Money. We will be back next week with another amazing guest. And we look forward to seeing you on social media. Let us know what was valuable about today's show, and we'll catch you next week.
Thank you for listening to Real Money with Lisa Chastain on the Voice America Business Channel. Miss the opportunity to call in, but have a question for Lisa regarding one of today's topics? You can send an email to Lisa at lisachastain.com. We will see you next time.